Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to this new episode of my podcast for learners of English. Just before we start, I'd like to let you know that I have recently uploaded Premium Series 29 Part 2. And in that episode, I'm doing pronunciation drills. Okay, listen and repeat pronunciation drills for the target language that we dealt with in Part 1 of Premium 29. Okay, so if you ever listen to my podcast and you think to yourself, Luke, could you do some sentences where you say the sentence and then leave a pause so that we can repeat after you? Because shadowing is great and everything, but it's a little bit difficult sometimes when maybe you speak quickly, or it's basically just a bit difficult to keep repeating while you're speaking. It sort of makes my brain hurt. I don't know. Do you ever think that to yourself? If you do, then good, you're thinking in English. Anyway, the point is, yes, I do those in premium series. Every premium series has got pronunciation drills where I say sentences that contain target language that I'm hoping to teach you, and then give you time to repeat those sentences after me. And I break them down, all of that stuff. I use my particular set of skills to help you to try to learn to speak like me. That's the idea. Okay, so Premium Series 29 Part 2 is available now, premium subscribers. And if you'd like to become a premium subscriber, then just go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. How are you doing today? How are you? You all right? And you might say, oh, I'm not bad, Luke. Or could be worse. Mustn't grumble. Can't complain. Not so bad, thanks for asking. All of which are quite normal British responses, even if they do sound on the negative side. They do a bit, don't they? How are you? How are you doing? Could be worse. Mustn't grumble. Can't complain. Not so bad. Slightly negative. Or maybe you could go more positive and you could say, well, Luke, I'm great. I'm fantastic. I'm radiant today, Luke. Positively radiant. I am glowing with happiness. I am ecstatic. I am joyful. All of which are synonyms of the word radiant, by the way. Which is a nice word, isn't it? Although it's to be honest, it's not that common for people to say I'm radiant in everyday conversation. So, you know, there's a nice word. Just don't use it. Okay? Well, you know, you can if you want. You can use it. It's your life, isn't it? But anyway, if you are radiant, good. And someone is now going, but Luke, how do you spell radiant? Okay, I'll spell it for you. R-A-D-I-A-N-T. Radiant, meaning kind of glowing. And certainly if you say, I'm radiant this morning, you look positively radiant. That would mean you're glowing with happiness, that you're so happy that it's showing up on your face. But as I said, it's not used that much. God knows why I chose to say it to you. But, you know, it's good, isn't it? It's good to know words and know that you shouldn't use them. That's kind of useful too, I hope you agree. Anyway, so maybe you are radiant. And if that is the case, then good. I'm very glad to hear that. Equally, I will accept, in response to the question, how are you doing? I will accept a simple I'm fine, thanks, or any of the other options that I've already said or that you already are aware of. Certainly, when someone asks you how you're doing, some kind of response is advisable and would certainly be better than just a blank-faced silence. Right, okay, so just basics of human interaction there. You're welcome. Very glad we sorted that out. Now then, so my guest on the podcast in this episode is Charlie Baxter. And Charlie is an online English teacher, a YouTuber, and a podcaster too. And you might well know him from his YouTube channel, which is called Real English with Real Teachers, which he does with his friend Harry. And you might also know him from his new-ish podcast, which is called The British English Podcast. I say it's new-ish because he started it about 6 months ago. Does that still count as new or not? I'm not sure. But anyway, he's got a podcast too, and it's called The British English Podcast. It's new-ish. I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but again, there's that one person going, "What is ish? Please explain." Okay, so if you add ish to the end of a word, then it's basically like kind of saying kind of or approximately. Okay, for example, you might say, "So I'll see you at 12-ish, which means that you'll see the person at about 12 o'clock, give or take a few minutes or something, around 12. I'll give you a call at sort of 12-ish. Equally for like things like a colour, you know, like what's Dave's new car's what's Dave's car's colour? No, that's not how you say that. What's the colour of Dave's car? What colour is his car? Who? Dave. What colour is Dave's car? Well, it's a sort of a greyish blue. It's a sort of boring greyish blue colour. All right, greyish blue. And similarly, newish. So his podcast is kind of newish, meaning it's not Dave's podcast. He hasn't got a podcast. Who is Dave? I don't know. Oh, God, I'm getting badly sidetracked by myself here. Come on, Luke, get on with it. All right, I will. So anyway, Charlie's podcast is newish. It's about 6 months old. Okay. Right. So anyway, we recorded this conversation that you're going to hear in this episode a few weeks ago with Charlie in Sydney, which is in Australia, just in case you'd forgotten or you weren't sure, and where he currently lives, and me in Paris, as usual. And Paris is in France, just, okay? Right. I don't know, it's weird. Sometimes I feel obliged to kind of name the country when I say a city. Like Sydney in Australia, you know, just in case. There's always one person who's like, "Sydney, what is Sydney?" Who is this individual who's like, "What? I don't understand anything. What is going on? What year is it? Who's the president?" There's always one person who doesn't understand anything. But anyway, but that's a sort of an American thing, isn't it? You know, Paris, France. They often do that, especially in films. You know, when the movie changes to a different location and they write the name of the place on the screen. Paris, France. Just in case you didn't know where Paris was. And often it's obvious as well. Like, you know, there's like a helicopter shot, and a big shot of Paris, and there's the Eiffel Tower, and it says Paris, France. And you think, thanks for clarifying that. Just in case, you know, there's anyone out there thinking that was Las Vegas or something. No, this is Paris, France. Anyway, I'm rambling. So Charlie was in Sydney, and in this conversation, and I was in Paris, as usual. And the main aim of this conversation was just to get to know Charlie, because I'd never actually spoken to him before, and ask him about life in Australia, and generally have a bit of a ramble with a fellow Brit living abroad and teaching English for a living. Naturally, the conversation went in a few different directions, and we covered a few different things. So here are some of the main points that you're going to hear in this rambling chat, just to help you like keep track of what's going on, so that you don't become that person who's like, "What? I don't understand what's happening." Let me just kind of briefly summarize things. So first I ask Charlie where exactly in the UK he comes from, and this leads to a bit of a discussion about the north-south divide in England and how the Midlands fit into that. You see, because in England there is a north-south divide in terms of cultural identity, but it's probably more complicated than just north and south when you consider other regions, particularly the Midlands, which, as the name suggests, are in the middle of England, and Wales in the west, which isn't actually part of England, of course, but still it is there. Not part of England, but it is part of Britain, and it is part of the UK. Not part of the EU, though, anymore. Ah, Brexit. Anyway, so it's not just north and south. You've got the Midlands, you've got Wales, you've got East Anglia in the east, and, of course, Cornwall down in the southwest. So is it just north and south? But people do talk about the distinction between north and south in England. And also, there is a general north-south divide in terms of accent. And you might have heard me mention the Bath Trap split before. In southern areas, people tend to say Bath with an R sound. And in northern parts, people tend to say Bath with an A sound. It's not just the word Bath or Bath. It's lots of other words, you know, podcast, podcast, grass, grass, laugh, laugh, and so on. So in northern parts, people will probably say Bath with an A sound, like in the word trap. So that's the Bath Trap split. But where is the dividing line between north and south? Where does the north begin, or where does the south begin? As you'll see, this is something that nobody's really able to agree on, but it's interesting nonetheless. We then talk about Charlie's university studies in psychology and his interest in NLP, which stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and then how he ended up choosing to go abroad and start teaching English for a living. This leads us to some of Charlie's travelling experiences in places like Chile, Germany, and Australia, including talk of things like active volcanoes, hot dogs absolutely covered in mayonnaise, rival sports shoe manufacturers, and everyday encounters with exotic Australian animals. I'll let you discover the rest as you listen. So this was a podcast crossover, and we actually recorded two conversations together. So there's this conversation for my podcast, in which I am interviewing Charlie, that's this one, and also another conversation for Charlie's podcast, in which he is interviewing me. So if you'd like to hear Charlie interviewing me as well, then you'll be able to find it as an episode of the British English Podcast. A link is in the description for that. Also, we both recorded video versions of our conversations, which we have uploaded onto our respective YouTube channels. So that's Luke's English Podcast on YouTube for mine, and Real English with Real Teachers for Charlie's. Again, you will find links for those in the description. Okay, so do dip into the episode description or the episode page on my website in order to find Charlie's side of this conversation and also videos for both. So there's plenty for you to listen to or watch. Now, there's not much more for me to say here. I'm going to stop rambling and then just start rambling again, but joined by Charlie. So not much more for me to say now in the introduction, except that I hope that you enjoy listening to the two of us chatting away and that it gives you the kind of listening practice that you need in your everyday life. I will talk to you again on the other side of this conversation. But now, let's meet Charlie Baxter, and here we go. Charlie Baxter, hello. Welcome onto my podcast. How are you today?
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm very well. It's getting late for me now. It's 10 p.m. over in Sydney, but early doors for you, right?
Well, it's now midday. It's 12 o'clock now. Mathematicians, can you work out the time difference? 10 hours difference. So, Charlie, you're in Sydney. I'm in Paris, as usual. So what's it like in Sydney at the moment then? I mean, what's it like living in Sydney as a Brit?
I really like the UK. I've got nothing against it. I'm looking forward to going back there to raise a family. But most Brits who come out to Sydney feel like we're on a long-term holiday and every day is a blessing. It feels almost like that. Like the sun is shining, the beach is everywhere. The landscape is beautiful. Most of the friends that I'm here with just like look at the difference between our quality of life and we laugh. We're just like, oh my God, they have it so good out here. It's unbelievable. So yeah, I'm happy here. I'm very happy for the time being.
For the time being, but you wouldn't consider staying long term then?
Well, I've got some family members here, but I think family will bring me back. Especially for, you know, the chapter of having a firstborn and figuring out how to be a father. I think that would be important to have support around me. And of course, my girlfriend, she's British and she would definitely want to be back around her family for that.
Yeah, so, yeah, that makes complete sense. Yeah, it's really important to have, like, you know, the grandparents around. I say the child's grandparents, your parents too, of course. Because
my grandparents. I've got one grandparent left, actually. Yeah. He's still alive and kicking. Yeah.
Would he be useful in the upbringing of the child?
Probably not. No, it's a little bit late in his life now.
Okay.
Yeah. But it would be good for him to meet.
Yeah.
The potential child of mine.
It is great for everyone when the children arrive, especially for the grandparents, because they get to enjoy the kids, but they don't actually have to have the full responsibility of the kids like they did before. So it's kind of like they get to just enjoy all the fun side of it. The parents get all the hard work.
It's true. Although my parents, they had three children. So I'm the youngest of three, and there were two. I have two sisters, and the middle child, she is a bit of a home girl. So she moved into a house just down the road from my parents. And then she had three children and, you know, all within 2 or 3 years. So they are full on grandparents, and they see their grandchildren very often. I would say almost too often.
Oh, really? Oh, that's nice, though. Kind of takes the pressure off you a little bit, too, because you're not going to be the first to have children in the family, I guess.
That's true. Yeah.
So, Charlie, tell me about yourself. So where are you actually from in England? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Guildford, or near Guildford, in Surrey. So that is south of London, southwest of London by about an hour if you're on the train.
Okay, I grew up, some of my time, I grew up in Ealing, which is not too far from Guildford.
No, not at all.
Similar neck of the woods.
Similar neck of the woods, indeed. Not all of your time.
No, I also lived in the Midlands as well for quite a long time. So for like from until about the age of 9, we lived in Ealing, west of London, you know, in West London. And then we moved to sort of the middle of nowhere in Warwickshire, the West Midlands, and then I've spent time in Liverpool and lived in Japan, and now I live in France. But I'm interviewing you here, Charlie. So
sorry. But I really do want to ask. Can I just ask one more thing? Do you identify as a Southerner or a Northerner?
You're giving away your Southern roots there, because I'm not from the North at all. I'm from the Midlands, if anywhere.
But the divide would include that, would it not? I heard it's not. Just a split across the middle. It's kind of diagonal. They say it's from Norwich down to Bristol.
We're talking about the distinction between north and south of England. Some people in the Midlands would say that there is another thing called the Midlands. So you've got the south, the Midlands, and the north. And in fact, if you get on the M6, the motorway, in the Birmingham area, right, in the Midlands, if you get on that motorway, there are signs that say the North, right? And you're in the Midlands. I don't know. I think no one agrees. No one actually agrees where the North begins and where the South begins. If you live in London, people say it's anywhere north of like the M25 motorway. Other people have different views on it. But as someone who spent a lot of time living in the Midlands, no, we don't consider ourselves to be Northerners. We consider ourselves to be Midlanders.
Okay.
Yes. So, no, I wouldn't say I'm from the North. I'm from the Midlands, but also from the South as well.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely agree that wherever you are, you treat the divide, if there is even a divide, differently. But I did hear that it kind of, there's this complicated little theory of this map between the Bristol and Norwich, and it includes some little lips based on their accent and other demographics.
Right.
It's kind of the spread away from London. So Wales is further away from London than perhaps, you know, Norwich, for example. So they kind of, it's kind of like, you know, the spreading of something like that.
But would people in Wales, or would people on the other side of this line? Now, the line sounds really interesting, like based on the different demographics, as you've said, like including accent, which is one of the main ones of, like, we've said, we were talking earlier about this, that the old Bath trap split, and whether, you know, people in the South say podcast and people in the North say podcast. So maybe that is a signifier of it. So this line may be based on that as a demographic. But what about the people who live on the north side of the line? Do they consider themselves to be from the north? I expect on the north side of the line you'd get, I wonder where Coventry is, or where even where Birmingham is. Where is Birmingham? It's probably on the north side of the line.
Birmingham's north, yeah.
Right, but if you go to Birmingham and say, you're northerners, they would say, no, we're not. We're from Birmingham. We're from the Midlands, you know?
Yeah.
So that surely has to be taken into account too, what people, how people see themselves.
It does get confusing. I think the closer you get to the location, the more opinions everyone has. You know, it's a bit like, are we European? You know,
yeah.
As an American, they would say, yeah, we are. But as a Brit, we're like, not sure. Welsh people would struggle to say that they're Northern.
They would say they're Welsh.
Like, I'm Welsh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. It's difficult to, I guess, also for people who are not from the UK, who are looking at the UK, trying to understand it, trying to get it all right. I would say, instead, just think of it as regions, like areas. So you got your south and north is quite useful for talking about the accent, as we've said,
yes.
the podcast thing. And maybe some types of identity. There is a sense that you got the north and the south. And the north would probably include those, mainly those industrial cities and the areas around them. So we think of like Liverpool, Manchester, Sheffield, Leeds, you know, these sorts of places. And there is a different culture. And even further north, you know, you venture further north to other places, you know, Newcastle and Sunderland and Middlesbrough and places like that. There is a sense there is a different culture in those areas compared to in London or other parts of the south. But then the Midlands and East Anglia and Wales, you know, where do they fit into all of that? It is a bit confusing. But I would say, yeah, think of it like this. The southeast and London, the west, the southwest, and if you get even down into Cornwall, they don't consider themselves to be part of the country.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I think it gets messy further away from the southeast area because that's kind of like the one identifier that they kind of group together with, like, oh, we're southerners. But as soon as you go away from that, there's so many different cultures. So it's kind of rude to suggest you're northerners because it's like saying French, Spanish, German, Italian, you're all Europeans. It's like, no, we've got our own identity.
If you take England and you move it on its side so that Cornwall is at the top, you'd actually realise that I think Cornwall is a similar distance from London as like some of those northern cities. I wonder even if like Manchester is closer to London than somewhere like Penzance in Cornwall.
I think, is it Land's End? Is that the end of it?
Land's End is the sort of southernmost tip of England down in the southwest. Yeah.
That seems to be further away than Snowdonia, the tallest mountain in Wales, as you know, but from London. So yeah. Snowdonia is closer.
Right. So this is interesting. But I guess what... This is where are you from, right? This is just where are you from? But you're from Guildford, which is just sort of in the London area. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And did you stay in Guildford like for most of your life then, or if you moved around a bit? I know that you've travelled, but like before you went to university, did you stay in Guildford that time?
Yes.
For that time?
Yes. My parents lived in two houses, but split about 50 metres apart. So when I was 5 years old, I had a very traumatic move 50 metres down the road and carried on living in a little village near Guildford.
Okay, yeah. So you went to university, you did psychology at university.
That's right.
Where did you actually go? Did you move to a different part of the country?
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, Nottingham Trent was...
Nottingham Trent?
Yes.
Nottingham, is that in the north?
That is, in my opinion.
I think it's in the Midlands. Yeah, I think for people in the Midlands, we claim Nottingham to be part of the Midlands.
Right, that's ours. Yeah.
That's ours. North Midlands, Northeast Midlands. But it's pretty close to like the north. Anyway, we could keep going on about this where's the north and south thing for ages. But you went to Nottingham Trent. Okay, cool. All right. What's it like in Nottingham compared to Guildford? Was it very different?
Well, there's actually a lot of Southerners who go to those universities, both Nottingham and Nottingham Trent. So it was quite familiar. There was a mix, though, of different kind of cultures at the same time. So it was an eye opener for a little Southern boy who hasn't ventured out of Surrey. So it was nice. I started to appreciate the different walks of life, and from then on, I started to be less of a posh twit, perhaps.
Yeah, really? Sounds like sort of Frodo Baggins leaving the Shire.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah. So how did you get into teaching English after you did psychology at university?
Yeah. Well, I came out of university and thought, I really like applying psychology to the idea of therapy and becoming a psychotherapist. So I did some training in NLP. I don't know if you've heard of that technique.
Yeah. Should we say what it is? Go ahead. You can do
it. Yeah. Neuro-linguistic programming. I think it's got a bad rap, though. What's your immediate feeling of NLP?
Well, I'm very interested in NLP. But yeah, I think I agree that there are probably two sides to it. That some people, when they hear about NLP, they think that it's a very sort of non-specific and not really a science, and it's the sort of thing that people do in annoying training sessions at work that you don't want to be part of. And like, okay, we're going to do neuro-linguistic programming in the session today, and then people are, oh, for God's sake, can't we just do something useful? It's that sort of thing that people think that it's a bit vague, and it's it's a kind of soft version of psychology. But then actually, on the other hand, the things I've read about NLP, I think there is a genuinely useful, interesting side to it, and it can be a very interesting way to understand the way that we it's a way to understand our psychology and the way that we communicate and things like that. I think that it's got a lot of value.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting to learn about it from the perspective of somebody who's very much into, coaching the mind as a therapist. And he gave me training in a way that is very far from what HR would use and marketing and stuff like that. And the danger I noticed was that it came about really quickly by these two guys. And then they wanted to let everybody use it. And so there was a low level of admittance into training it and then dispersing it out into the world. So it became sort of filtered and people started using it easily in different ways. So it's kind of, there's a lot of bad out there, but there's also some really good bits, good golden nuggets of it.
How has NLP, can you tell us about some of the principles of NLP and maybe how you've applied them or how they've helped you?
Yeah. So there's a coaching model that they tend to teach you about, and it's all about noticing a trigger that you don't like in your life, rather than acknowledging the reaction that you have. So if maybe your wife frustrates you, then they would say, okay, what's the trigger? What's the moment? And it's like when she says, have you, you haven't hung up the bath towel or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's a trigger of this spiral of negativity. And then that starts to affect your value system of what you think is not appreciated in your relationship with your partner. They don't appreciate that I tidy up all the time. And then these kind of things spiral out of control. But it's taking those triggers and those rationalizations of that trigger and then detaching yourself from it and then connecting it with a positive version of how you want to be and then multiplying that into, okay, if you can be like that for 5 years or so, how would you be as a person? And then it's like making it even bigger and bigger and bigger. And suddenly that trigger creates a positive response from you. You're like, oh, that's so cool. Because it's like that bath towel moment turns into, I'm going to be this comedian doing stand up in the Fringe Festival, for example.
So it's kind of like turning, like finding the root of negative moments in your day and exploring what they represent, and then somehow converting them into more positive things, or having some distance and understanding the way we react to things that happen to us, and using that sort of perspective to have a more positive outlook and to interpret things in a more positive way, which just leads to more positivity and more success in one's life.
Yeah, great.
And did you not want to then be a therapist, or what are the options? It would be a therapist or a psychotherapist. Are these the options that you would have?
Psychotherapist or a counsellor, traditionally they say, and then a psychologist would kind of be similar to a psychotherapist, but it's more about research, I guess, on the route to it. But yeah, normally after a psychology degree, you'd have to do a master's and then either a PhD, or specifically within psychotherapy, a diploma of some sort, or a counselling diploma. So there's a long route ahead after a bachelor's.
Yeah.
And then I did the NLP and I started becoming a life coach or a psychology coach. And did that for career guidance for people at the age of 16 to 17. Did that for about a year. And then I continued it actually when I was teaching. But I remember my auntie, she came back from Australia, because she lives in Australia. And she said, "Don't you want to travel, Charlie?" And I was 22, going back to home after university. And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Well, you could do this later. Like, this is a career that people can do after they've got some life experience." I was like, "Yeah, I'm very aware of that." And so she said, "Well, people teach English and they go abroad and they have an amazing time." And that instantly got me. And I, yeah, got on the first plane to Santiago in Chile.
Wow. So yeah. You're just like, right, I'm going to go off and have life experiences now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Santiago, Chile. Why did you choose to go to Chile?
I wanted to go to South America. Not sure exactly why I wanted that continent, but that was the go-to thought. I think originally I wanted to go to Rio or something like that in Brazil. But I was able to get a job before flying to Santiago. That was the safe kind of bet that my parents wanted me to find before flying.
There was teaching work available.
Yes.
And you got the job before you flew. Yeah.
Exactly.
So yeah. Good. So you had something safe to actually, you weren't just like, "See ya, I'm going to go to South America and see what happens." You actually had a job lined up there. Okay.
Yeah.
How long did you stay in Chile?
About 9 months. Yeah. And then I traveled south, saw a lot of the country. It's a beautiful country, amazingly narrow. And like at one part, we were doing this road trip up and you could see the two mountainous ranges, because there's the Andes and then there's the coastal mountain range. And you can almost kind of feel like you are part of this narrow bit of land that is the country in some parts.
Yeah, if you look at Chile on the map, it's just like, this really slim bit that goes all the way down the down the coast of South America there. Yeah. Interesting.
It was amazing though. Like the northern, because it's so long, they've got like Antarctic kind of conditions, and then they've got desert in the top, and then the salt flats that are part of the Bolivia crossing. It's incredible, like so diverse, and wonderful to travel up and down.
Yeah,
highly recommend it.
Oh God, I'd love to go. Sounds amazing.
I spent a birthday walking up and down a snow-capped volcano that was active as well.
Really? Like sort of active in the, was there smoke coming out of it?
Yeah, smoke
really?
Coming out. Yeah.
So wait a minute. You spent a birthday walking around the snowy top of an active volcano in Chile. Okay. Did you climb all the way up, or how did you get up to the top? Did you climb up? Did you walk up, or what? I've done a volcano as well. I did one in Indonesia, active volcano, climbed up Mount Rinjani, and it's like nearly 4,000 meters up, and it was punishing, grueling, a really tough climb, like much more difficult than my wife and I expected it to be, because you're climbing up sand and ash, you know, and it was really hard, like one of the hardest things that we've ever done. It was like 3 days of it, and you're just covered in dust, and it was horrible. It was really hard work. You started climbing at 2 o'clock in the morning and stuff, but getting to the top was amazing. What about you though, in Chile then? How did you actually get up to the top there?
It's surrounded by slightly elevated land already, but yeah, I think we must have got driven up to a certain point, yeah, and then we walked up to the snow, and then we put the, are they called crampons?
Crampons are things that give you spikes on your feet. Yes, crampons. Yeah.
Yeah, we put crampons on. Actually, after that, it got really boring because it's so slow. Like, you've got to do little steps, and you're just looking at your toes because you're following the next person. And then when we got to the top, it was amazing views, but it was freezing cold. So we kind of were like, okay, take the photo. We've got to go. Kind of, happy birthday. Yeah, let's go.
Right, okay. Chili, what was the food like?
It was interesting. I got a bit of a culture shock when I landed, and it was breakfast time, and people were tucking into these hot dogs, like these street vendors would give them, but they were full with a lot of mayonnaise and a lot of other toppings as well. But it was like these, you know, those American kind of frankfurts, yeah, in a bun, a dry, yeah, bun. But they had good toppings, but it was just very strange to have it in the morning. And
like, would you like some sausage with your mayonnaise? Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah. And that reminds me.
He's got one right here. My breakfast or dinner in your case. Yeah. Sorry. What did it remind you of?
So they had a lot of mayonnaise, and I was learning Spanish when I got there, and very beginner level. And for the first like 4 months, I had a local vendor that was outside the office. And when I forgot to make my lunches, I'd go and have a hot dog. And they laughed a lot of the times when I was ordering it. And then finally, after 6 months of, you know, persevering through this awkward exchange, one of them was new, and she just laughed her face off. And I was like, what is going on? And I had been mispronouncing mayo, I think, to be mayo. And for Chileans, that means a little bit of piss, or no, piss. It means piss. Yes, it means piss. But I would be saying un poco mayo, so just a little bit of piss, please, a little bit.
Just a little bit. I want some piss, but not too much. Just a little bit of piss. So a sausage with loads of mayo, like normal. Too much mayo, thanks. And a little bit of piss, just. And like, do you think they were actually, you know, they weren't actually giving you a little bit of piss? They were like, well, this crazy English guy, well, he asked for it. Hopefully they won't. They weren't. The good people of Chile wouldn't do that to you, of course.
No, hopefully not.
Chile, yeah. And you've been to lots of other places, though. You've done various travels over the last few years. Where else did you visit then?
So bit of a love story that I'll skip. Kind of, but
took
me to America.
A love story that you'll skip. You can't just dangle that in front of her. A love story. All right. Well, maybe I shouldn't ask. Maybe it's a sensitive subject, but
it's not sensitive, but it's just, you know, don't really want to sort of, it's not bumming people out, but it's just like, oh, kind of.
I know. Not, you got involved, you know, with a girl and it didn't work out and you left the country. You got a girl pregnant and you left the country, right? No, of course, that's not what happened.
Yeah, it's much more fun you guessing. Yeah.
I'm just assuming that you...
Why would I end up from South America to America?
Why did you end up from... Because you met an American girl, a girl from North America, and she was like, America's awesome, and we're going to love... Everyone's going to love your British accent. And so that... And she convinced you to go to... Where was it? Like Wyoming or Arkansas or some place in the Midwest. I'm just inventing a story now, Charlie. And you ended up in Milwaukee and you thought, yeah, this isn't so great. And the relationship didn't work out. But you did some traveling in North America before going somewhere else. Is that what happened?
Very nice. I like it. Well, part of that is kind of true. I did end up in the Midwest, Ohio, to be specific.
Ohio gozaimasu. Sorry. It's Japanese.
The last podcast on my podcast, you were dropping in that I knew Japanese culture, and I don't have the foggiest, unfortunately. I want to, but
I thought you did.
I've not been. Yeah,
Ohayou gozaimasu means happy. It means good morning in Japanese. I just wanted to say that just for the Japanese listeners and viewers. Yeah. Ohayou gozaimasu. Yeah. But you went to Ohio itself. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, okay. It wasn't an American, although I was dating an American in South America. But that ended. And then the girl that I met in university, we got back in contact, and we realized that we missed each other very much. And then I moved to where she was, which was Ohio, because she got a good job out of her degree.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Great. Yeah. So Ohio. Okay. Wow. What is that different? What's it like living in Ohio?
Well, they say that it's actually where market research happens, because it's the exact average between the East and West Coast and the Midwest in general. So it's kind of like the exact or the epitome of an American experience. So it was quite cool to experience that. The beer pong kind of stereotypes were all there, and the frat parties, and the city that I was in, Columbus, it was a university city. Ohio campus is massive. So yeah, lots of young people and all doing that American Pie kind of stuff.
Whoa, party time! Smashing cans of beer on their heads and drinking it and passing out and stuff like that. All the stuff we've seen in the American films, it's all true then.
I feel like it is, what I experienced. Yeah, I was like, stereotypes sometimes bang on.
Yeah, every now and then. That's right. There is a kernel of truth in every stereotype, and it seems that Ohio is that kernel in America, that nut of pure Americanness. Okay. And so what was the next port of call after the States then?
The States was followed by Germany.
Okay. Germany. This is a very interesting line you're drawing on the map here.
I know. Yeah, it's a bit confusing. The reason was, so I moved from South America to America to live with my girlfriend. And then we decided, well, actually, it was because I couldn't work officially in the US. And I've got dual citizenship in America, in Australia and the UK. And so I was doing this naughty thing of jumping the border and then coming back as a different version of myself. And they don't know that. Like, when they get the records up, they're like, you're two different people. You haven't been in the country for 3 months. I'm like, oh, wow, this is interesting.
So in the States, you didn't have a green card or a working visa or something. And so you had to, like, pop. Well, I guess, did you go to Canada or Mexico? Which direction did you go?
I did both at different times, but and also went back to see my family. So, yeah, kind of a mix.
You just pop over the border and then come back in with a new three-month visa kind of thing, and that's fine, it's legit. Okay. Yeah. All right, so you're sort of like an illegal immigrant almost.
Doing teaching English online. So yeah, then we wanted to move back to Europe, but we didn't want to move to the UK because we knew that we would be going back to the UK at a later stage in our life. And Stacey managed to get a good job with her career. She landed a job with Puma. So, off we were to Germany.
Right. Puma, the sneaker manufacturer, one of the original German sneaker manufacturers, along with Adidas and Puma. You know the story, right?
Yeah.
You must do.
But, what do you know of?
Well, all I know is I know this story from teaching English from, like, Headway Upper Intermediate course book, which is one of those standard course books that all the English teachers used. Certainly in classes. So then they often have these stories in them. And so, I think that Adidas was a company set up by, was it Adi Dassler? Was that the guy's name who set up the company? I think so. That's why it's Adidas, because it was Adi Dassler, or maybe the two brothers. But it was one brother, it was two brothers who set up the company, and they fell out with each other. And the other brother left Adidas and set up a rival company, and that was puma, or puma, as we tend to say in England. So it's a sort of like a family, it was a family thing, and both companies came out of a dispute between two brothers, and puma was the other one. All right, okay.
Yeah, spot on. That's it, yeah. And there's an actual, so Nuremberg is the biggest city near the offices, and then a very long name, Herzogenaurach, is the town that they are in. And there's a bridge, or like a river, and there's a divide. And there's also this like common trend of like looking down at one's shoes to differentiate which side of the place you're from and which team you're on, kind of.
Oh, right.
So a real like, oh, okay, you're Addy, you're Puma,
So. All right, so there's a real, a genuine sort of rivalry between the two parts of town, or the two areas there. There's the Adidas people and the Puma people.
Yeah.
Right, and you were on Team Puma.
Yes.
Did you have to wear Puma trainers?
Well, I got them free, so I did. Yeah, I got a lot of free stuff, which is brilliant for me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nice. Didn't have to buy gym clothes for about 3 years.
Wonderful. But you were already a Puma person, were you? You didn't have to like kind of go, well, Adidas trainers, goodbye, and like chuck away your Adidas stuff.
I was still allowed to, but Stacey, she wasn't actually allowed to wear any Adidas at all. And if you're caught wearing Adidas outside of hours, it's still like talked about.
Oh, they're like the kind of HR department, like, can I have a word with you about Stacey? I noticed her wearing a pair of Adidas sneakers during her free time, and we're going to have to do something. We're going to have to let her go. Yeah, I can imagine. Wow, it's proper stuff, a proper kind of rivalry.
It's exactly what they had sometimes, yeah.
Really? Like spies, like observing their sports clothing.
Yeah, some of the interns would come in and they didn't know this rule, and then they had to break it to them, like, in the office, you can't wear anything other than the brand. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
Wow, interesting stuff. Yeah. Okay, so Germany, did you learn any German?
I did. I don't know how much I've got left, but I had about a year and a half of lessons. I was really keen to get into it when I got there. And I was still holding on to like learning Spanish, so I was a bit confused about them. And then I also wanted to learn Italian, so I thought, oh, I'll learn all three at once. And I ended up focusing on German for a bit, but then it didn't sink in. And the people in Nuremberg were very excited to talk in English a lot of the time. So after half of my experience, I kind of, I sadly didn't pursue German as much. And I had a huge English bubble around me because of the expats that were in Puma and Adidas.
Right.
So it was easy to not do the right thing, unfortunately.
That's the thing about being an English speaker, is that, I mean, this is an excuse, of course, for not learning languages, but it is also a reason that you go to places and everyone's just really happy to speak to you in English and practice their English with you. And so you just get really good at English.
Yeah.
Like, even though it's your first language, it's just like, I'm getting better and better at English, but my other languages are suffering. It's kind of like that, isn't it?
It's definitely an excuse, but it is something that is real. Yeah.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Okay. So Germany, and then, well, I'm wondering how you then ended up in Australia then. Are there other countries in between?
No, that's it. So it's Germany to Australia. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you talked about this before, your reason. You talked about the fact that in Australia, you're always amazed by the quality of life, and you're sort of stunned by, I guess, how much space you have, and the weather is wonderful and stuff like that. Are there not, like, this is like the internet's meme about Australia, is that it's the country is full of animals that want to kill you, that everything wants to kill you, like the weather, the sunshine is much stronger, and the climate is maybe a bit more harsh, and that there are snakes and spiders and other things that, and crocodiles and things that constantly want to eat you. So is this true? To what extent do you have to be careful of things like spiders and stuff?
I remember when I got there, my sister lives here, and we arrived and we went into their downstairs bathroom, and I had a shower, and on the shower was this tiny spider, and I was so scared. I was just like, oh, what do I do? What do I do in this situation? Because in the UK, we just kind of brush it off. But I was like, these could kill me. What do I do? And now I just look at that and think how ridiculous. There's so many non-poisonous spiders, and it's very rare. It's possible, definitely possible, but that it's very rare. And especially in cities, you don't come across it. The weird thing is seeing possums and bats and this weird thing called an ibis, or what they call a bin chicken. So those are the weird things for me. Iguanas. Guanas, they're also strange to see.
Four animals. Possums, bats, bin chickens, bats. Ibis things, and and the fourth one was iguanas. Guanas. Yeah. So, all right, go on. Tell us about these four animals. Educate me. What's the first, the possums then? What are possums, and what's the issue with possums?
Possums, nothing to be alarmed with. They look a little bit like a squirrel on steroids, and sometimes they've got scary looking red eyes, like they're going to kill you. But normally that's when you're shining your light on them. But sometimes they have the bushy tail and they look cute, but they're just in the trees, or the palm trees, which is also quite nice. And then the bats, they're a bit freaky, but yeah, they don't touch you. They're massive though, massive, circling around you. And then, I actually videoed. Sorry, I videoed one because it was on the power line and it was hanging upside down. And I videoed it, and I was about to put it on Instagram. And then somebody said, "You know that bat's dead." And apparently, it had been frozen by the power line, but it was upside down and it had clamped on. So I think they've got to go and get that and take it off at some point. Oh. But it's been on there for about 3 or 4 days now.
You're like, hey, cute bat sleeping on the power line. Hey, Instagram. Hey, Instagram stories. It's like, you know, that bat's dead. Like, oh, God. Sorry. I went to Sydney briefly once, and I spent time in the botanical gardens. And yeah, it's a beautiful place, and the opera house is just there and stuff. But yeah, there were like various animals. It was pretty odd. It was like, oh my God, look at these huge fruit bats. They like fruit bats or what?
Yeah.
We call them fruit bats, exactly. Like large bats. I don't know how big they are, but they look really big. And it's like, wow. And then when they all fly and take off, it's pretty kind of, it seems pretty creepy if you're not used to it. Having these large bats flying around, it's like, wow, this is so creepy.
Yeah. And you must have seen the bin chickens then, if you've been to Sydney.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ibis. These are like sort of birds. Well, I saw these white parrots roaming around. No?
Did they have very long beaks?
No. They were cockatoos.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The cockatoos are nice.
White parrots with yellow feathers at the back of their head like that. Like, you know. Sort of walking around the park. It's like, whoa, what are all these animals?
But they're quite pretty. They're quite nice.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah. But no, the bin chickens. No, I don't think I came across them. I came across some seagulls that tried to steal my lunch, but no bin chickens. So go on, tell us about the bin chickens with the big beaks.
Yeah, you clearly haven't been hanging around any bins in your trip to Sydney.
No.
They've got a very, very long beak. And they're kind of like a tall chicken with very long legs, but they look like they've grown up in a dump, kind of. Yeah,
they're disgusting.
Don't look like they've got nice meat inside them to eat.
They're like,
it would be horrible.
Kind of scrawny and look a bit dirty, and they're not very. And they're called bin chickens, presumably because they steal food from the bins.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. They're a pest.
Yeah. Yeah. They are a pest to them, but to a foreigner, it's quite, ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's like almost being in a zoo in England.
Yeah, that's kind of what my experience was like in the botanical gardens. It's just like, I'm just going to go and have my lunch here. And it's like, oh my goodness, big bats, parrots, and other things. Yeah, it was pretty weird.
Yeah.
All right. And iguanas then. This is the fourth animal you mentioned.
Ah. Oh. Huge lizards, huge lizards. Yeah, about a meter, maybe even longer than a meter, and very stocky. And I remember I caught one even going at quite a fast pace across me, chasing down a kookaburra nest. And the kookaburras were like swooping and like kind of making noises to try and shoo him away.
Kookaburra ring.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's another animal.
The kookaburra.
Kookaburra. Yeah. Okay. And they've got this weird wailing sound in the morning, like a like a monkey almost.
Oh, right. Wow. Yeah. It's like a totally different country, isn't it?
Yeah.
But are these animals, do they affect your life in any way? Do they make it more difficult, or are they dangerous to you or anything? Or are they just interesting to see?
Yeah, I think they're just interesting to see. No downside to those guys. My girlfriend did actually come across one of the worst snakes in the first month or two. And she was with my sister's dog and she had taken her off the lead and the dog was going towards the snake. And so she had a scary moment. But other than that, no, we've not come across. I almost want to see a snake. I don't know if that's bad to jinx myself, but
yeah, it's better to see one than to get bitten by one. In fact, it's better to see it than not to see it, in a way, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. If you're getting bitten.
Or if before you get bitten, like if you see the snake, at least you can get out of its way. If you don't see it, then you don't know, do you?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The other real thing is petrified when I do swim. But yeah, when I get in the ocean, I think of sharks and that is scary.
Yeah.
I don't like that thought.
Because there are great white sharks around the on the coast there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Dun, 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 dun. You get that music.
I've got an app.
Yeah.
A shark app. And it notifies you when there's been a sighting or like a, because they've got tags in some of them. So they tell you when they're close to Bondi or Manly or something. So I check that before I go in.
Wow. Mm. Wow. It's amazing. Totally different lifestyle. Okay. So then lots of traveling around teaching English in each location. In physical classrooms or online as well, I expect.
Mainly online. Yeah, I started in Chile face-to-face, but then I got a teaching job in an office online with English First. And I quickly realized, I could be doing this on the beach on my computer.
Yeah.
So I quickly kind of made my own little crappy website and then encouraged people to go there. And then it kind of snowballed.
Yeah, that's great. And then you started doing the YouTube channel, I guess, first. That's Real English with Real Teachers. And then your podcast is sort of fairly recent then, I guess, in the last six months or so, right? So the YouTube channel's with your friend, what's his name again?
Harry.
Harry, it's you and Harry. Yeah. So, well, was it an easy transition going from like doing online teaching to making content on YouTube? What's your experience been like doing the YouTube stuff?
Yeah. It was actually like a little passion project because Harry had started teaching about the same time as me. And I had been encouraging him to do online stuff because he was driving all around the place trying to meet his students and then having a long day. And then I said, well, let's just do a little podcast. And it was meant to be a podcast to begin with. And then Harry was like, let's just do Talking Head kind of podcast. And then it turned into a YouTube video, YouTube channel. But to begin with, it was quite easy because it was just two teachers having a conversation similar to this. And we were actually really slow. Like we were talking very, very slow because we thought that that's what most of our audience would need. But in actual fact, it's turned out to be, far from. They say speed up.
It's interesting, the slow thing, because as teachers, when we actually are teaching people in classes, and many, many times those students are pre-intermediate or intermediate level students, it's necessary to speak slowly so that the lesson works, so that they can understand you. And so as experienced teachers, we assume when we're making our content like this, that we should be speaking slowly. And yet, the comments that we get from the audience are, don't speak slowly, or, I don't like it. They speak too slowly. It seems that a lot of people want us to speak more naturally and more quickly. It's a funny one, isn't it? I'm sure that there are so many people who need us to speak more slowly, but for some reason, when we do speak slowly and grade our English like that, it becomes less interesting and less enjoyable to watch or listen to. So it's an interest. It's you have to it it as teachers, we don't want to speak too quickly. And yet when we're making content, it seems speaking naturally and fast is what most people want online. Funny one, isn't it?
I think it, yeah, it is funny. It's hard to know what to do. But I think those that are of a good enough level to need native speech would find it very boring, whereas people who can't keep up probably just look for something else rather than say slow down. We do get comments saying, can you please slow down?
Yeah.
Which I definitely appreciate.
Yeah.
But yeah, in an ideal world, we could make the content three times.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like the ideal, but it would just be very time consuming.
That's right. And confusing for the audience, because they'd be like, oh God, which one shall I watch? And then they end up watching all three of them. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So then the podcast as well. So you decided to do an audio only podcast too. What was the decision to move away from the video content into doing the audio content?
Yeah, well, we were doing a lot of live lessons on YouTube, and we were running for about 60 minutes, and we noticed that YouTube's more like 6 minutes kind of playtime. So we quickly thought that's not the best option for YouTube as a platform, but we really like the long form. And I personally resonate with podcasts a lot more. I listen to so many in my day and I have a lot more time for them. And I feel a lot more connected to the podcast host. So I've always wanted to do one. And I originally, when we started YouTube, I wanted it to be a podcast, but we got distracted with video content. It kind of came full circle for me. Harry decided not to continue doing it on the podcast because he felt like the YouTube was enough. And I then wanted to do kind of my own thing as well. And I've really enjoyed it. It's been a wonderful experience for the last, as you said, 6 months. Yeah.
What's your favorite episode that you've done so far?
I got quite a few opinions of friends and family from different countries, which was quite interesting, and put that into one called British Stereotypes, which I like. I think that was episode 2 or 3. I did a British humour one, which was quite nice because I liked the research behind that. I think you mentioned Kate Fox, Watching the English. That's a very good book for that. I really enjoy the collaborations. I did one with Martin from Rock and Roll English. I don't know if you've collaborated with him.
Yes, I've done a couple of things with him in the past. Yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Always good fun to talk to Martin. Yeah.
Yeah, he's funny. Yeah. 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 So, yeah, quite a few, though. Yeah. I think I've got 15 out now. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Roundabout.
Yeah. You've got a few episodes to go before you catch me up, though, of course.
Yeah, what number is this?
Simon, this is going to be like 700 and something. Isn't there a quote of like, you know, if you just, isn't madness like doing the same thing again and again and expecting different results? I don't know if this counts as madness, though, Charlie.
Well, it's working for you.
It's working, yeah. I'm not expecting different results. I expect the same results to continue. It's working great for me. I love it, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Can I ask you about the awards? I remember I saw something on your website and I heard it, I think, when I started doing the YouTube channel. I was like, oh my God, he's won loads of awards for this. How does that happen? What are they?
So they've kind of disappeared, but the first four things were Macmillan Dictionary Awards. So Macmillan, the people who make the dictionaries, they set up this thing called I Love English, and it was the Macmillan I Love English Awards. And there were different categories, including like best website for learning English, best thing for learning English. And I was actually in the best blog for learning English, because as well as doing the podcast, I had the what I called Luke's English blog. It's just now my website, but in those days it was Luke's English blog, and it was where I put text, a lot of the text for the episodes I was making, the audio episodes and other stuff, and I would sometimes post text only posts on there. And so because there was no best podcast for learners of English, they just didn't include that as a category, maybe because podcast hadn't really taken off at that point. I was in the best blog category, and I asked all my listeners to vote for me, and they did. And I won that 4 years in a row of like best blog for learning English. And so that's those ones. And then also the British Podcast Awards. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah. That's amazing.
But I didn't win the British Podcast Awards because that's, I mean, that's huge. And it's like all of the podcasts in the UK, and this includes all the big ones, like the ones from the BBC and stuff like that. But there's the Listener's Choice category in the British Podcast Awards. And which year was it? 2017 or 2016? I can't remember. But I was in the Listener's Choice category 2 years in a row. And the first year, so I made a lot of effort to get my listeners to vote for me. I thought if all my listeners voted for me, I could win this. I thought I have a chance. But I was up against, you know, really big, well-established podcast. And in the first year, I think it was 2016. I'm not sure. I can't remember. It's on my website. I actually came third in the Listener's Choice category, which I still can't really believe. So the first one was Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo's film review, which is actually my favorite, maybe my favorite podcast of all time. And I've been listening to it for many, many years. And it's just, they're just brilliant. The two of them, Mark and Simon, they're great. They're like a married couple, listening to them ramble on, and not just about films, but other things. I just love it so much. And it was a huge inspiration for starting my own podcast. They were first. And then the Anfield Rap, which is a Liverpool Football Club fan podcast, was the second one. And then there was me in third place. And I beat so many other ones. I still can't really believe it. And they tweeted, I have the evidence. They tweeted, here are the gold medal goes to Mark and Simon, the silver medal goes to, the Anfield Rap, and the bronze medal, Luke's English Podcast. So I won the bronze medal in the Listener's Choice Awards of the British Podcast Awards, 2000 and something, 16 or 17. And then I did it again in the next year. And I got pushed out by George Ezra and friends. I know, bloody George Ezra. Any time I hear anyone talk about George Ezra, I'm like, bloody George Ezra. But he pushed me out, so I didn't get in the top three. I was in the top 10, though, apparently.
That must mean that, obviously could have native listeners, but that would mean that it's all these non-native listeners voting for the British awards.
And no, so
they have to be within the UK.
No. And this is the thing. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I kind of, maybe I shouldn't even have been in it, but I'm British. It's a podcast that the people voting, I think the British Podcast Awards was targeting probably mainly British people who listen to podcasts made in the UK.
And then they're like, who's this Parisian guy?
Well, I'm not a Parisian. I mean, I consider myself still to be.
His IP address says Paris.
No, my IP address says London. My website is hosted in the UK. Oh. So, I mean, if we're going to get legal on in this case, but I think probably most of the other voters would have been British people voting in the UK. And I've got this international audience. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it stipulated anything about where the voters have to be located. I don't know. I'm taking it, Charlie. I'm having it. I'm having that.
Yeah. Congratulations. Take it. Definitely. Can I ask, was it just a tweet? Did they not give you something?
I didn't get anything.
No,
I didn't get anything. But I mean, this was the first year they did it. There was an awards ceremony, but I didn't attend.
I saw a photo of you attending something.
Yeah, that was the British Council Elton Awards.
Oh,
the Eltons are the
got onto that yet.
Yeah, the Eltons are an industry thing, an English teaching industry thing, and it's all about innovation in English language teaching. And it's like writers of course book materials or different types of sort of, materials normally for learners of English that can be applied to the teaching of English. People who've written new course books or developed new apps and things like that, they can apply to the Elton Awards. And I was nominated for a British Council Elton Award in what was the category? I can't remember now. It's a few years ago. But yeah, I was... Oh, no, and there's another award. I was given an award with my colleague, Andy Johnson. Well, former colleague, Andy Johnson. We did a presentation at a BSIG event. That's sort of Business English conference. It's run by the same people who run the IATEFL conference. Okay. And and Andy and I did, you know, it's one of these conferences where people are giving different speeches. We did a speech about writing materials with narrative elements in them, course materials. I used to do lots of course material writing back in the day. And so we did a presentation about it, and we won the award for best presentation by a first-time speaker, even though there was two of us. And who gave us the certificate? It was David Crystal. David Crystal, the linguist, the author, the writer of great books, like, for example, this series. This is David Crystal's book about spelling in English, and he's got loads of other books. David Crystal is amazing.
Have you had him on your channel?
I've interviewed him several times. This is his latest book. It's about the art. It's about how conversations work in English. But David Crystal is one of the world's, you know, most respected linguists, and he's an expert on the English language and stuff. And he's amazing. And so I got to meet him when he gave us the certificate, the award, and I got chatting with him afterwards when we were drinking wine at the end. And he's great. I think he's brilliant. And so I was able to then sort of like afterwards, hey, remember me? Would you be happy to be interviewed? And he was like, yeah, of course. He's really, really open to interviews and things. Yeah. So that's how I ended up meeting David Crystal.
Mm. That's lovely. No brainer for him, though, if he's awarded somebody, you know, one of the best podcasts for some category, he's obviously going to be willing. There's no better way of opening the dialogue. Like, do you want to come on my show? You've just given me an award for how good it is. You might as well come on.
I didn't actually pluck up the courage to invite him on that day. I was too starstruck. Okay. And I'm a bit shy. It might not be obvious, but sometimes I'm a bit shy. And I was just happy to be in his company, just sharing a glass of wine with him. And it's the sort of thing that afterwards I'd be like, say to my wife, hey, I met David Crystal. It was amazing. And she was like, she would say, did you invite him on your podcast? I was like, no. You know,
loser. What a stupid idea.
No. Like, my podcast, I can't invite him on my podcast. It's kind of like how my brain works. And she was like, no, you should. You should totally invite him. And I was, and then my brain's like, oh yeah, I should have invited him. So I actually contacted him a few years later. Yeah, because sometimes I'm just happy in my own world, just talking to my friends and just, you know, rambling on about my stuff, the stuff that I ramble on about. But then sometimes I think, oh, I should contact David Crystal or I should contact Stephen Krashen or something like that. You know, I'm not entrepreneurial enough. I should be more entrepreneurial.
I think that's what makes it such a good podcast, though, that it's so friendly and so relatable for the listeners. I think the fact that you've got such like people on your podcast that are friends of yours.
Yes, I hope so. You too. Charlie, nice to speak to you.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
To speak to you too.
This is me wrapping up the episode. Very nice to talk to you. Best of luck with the podcast and the YouTube channel and their wonderful life down under in Australia, and the Puma trainers, which do you still wear?
They've
Puma
perished. Or? They've perished a bit. Yeah. I think I put them. Oh no, I've got one pair left.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll wear them for you.
You're allowed to wear Adidas again. Are you allowed? Adidas is back
and
in your
Reebok.
Life. Yeah. And all the other brands as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We could be here all day.
We could be, couldn't we? Lots of fun, Charlie. Thank you very much. And viewers, you can see, I guess, our conversation that we had earlier today on your YouTube channel. Will it be on your YouTube channel? Where's our side of this conversation going to go? Where can people find your stuff and our conversation?
Some of it will be on YouTube, but the main full episode will be on the podcast. So that will be the British English Podcast. But yeah, the YouTube channel is Real English with Real Teachers. But my main focus at the moment is the podcast, and then like all of the learning resources behind it. So I'm working very hard at the moment with that website that I've built. So yeah, the podcast or the YouTube channel. But then if they wanted to dig even deeper, the BritishEnglishPodcast.com.
There will be links in the description, everybody, okay? So, you know, do the usual thing and check the links in the description. Charlie, great. Well, I'll let you go now because you've probably got to go to bed. It's probably bedtime or late at night. I need to go and have lunch. Yeah, it's been lots of fun and nice one.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I will go to bed and I will... yeah, wish you a good rest of your day. But yeah, thank you very much again, and maybe speak to you in the future.
Yes. Okay, mate. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was my chat with Charlie Baxter. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed spending an hour or so in our company. Now, just to say what's already been said, but just to say it again, or to re-say it, to restate, that's the word, just to restate a couple of things. So yes, there is a video version of this conversation, which you can find on YouTube. And if you do go onto YouTube to watch that conversation, then don't forget to, of course, smash that like button, because that's what you have to do, as we know. You got to smash the like button, smack the like button, or just, you know, feel free to just gently tap or click the like button in the usual way. To be honest, it makes no difference how you click like or subscribe. I would recommend that you don't smash it, because no doubt you'll be using your phone or a tablet or your computer. And if you smash it, I mean, the like button's going to be okay, but your computer will get smashed. So don't smash the like button. Just tap or click gently in a very sober and controlled and sensible manner. That's probably the best thing to do. So anyway, like and subscribe, okay, on YouTube. I'm getting close to 100,000 subscribers now. Yes, is it going to happen? I hope so. And if I do actually get there, which it looks like I'm going to, then YouTube will probably send me a plaque. Oh, and I can't wait to get my hands on one of those things. Why, Luke? Why is it necessary to have a plaque? What's so good about that? I don't know, really. I don't know why that's so great, but it's a thing with stuff written on it. A physical embodiment of 100,000 subscribers. That's what that will be. If YouTube decides to give it to me, because I understand that there is a process. Once you get to 100,000 subscribers, you have to wait for weeks. Like, YouTube will make you wait for ages before sending you an email. And I think maybe there's like a process where they have to decide whether, you know, you've actually attained those 100,000 subscribers in a legitimate way. Anyway, so hopefully if YouTube decides that it's all above board and it's all legitimate, then they'll send me a thing. They'll send me a plaque in a box, and maybe I'll do one of those YouTube unboxing videos where I sort of ceremoniously unbox the thing live on YouTube. That's a promise. Okay. That is a promise. If I do get to 100,000 subscribers, then I'll do a live unboxing. Oh, why is it that on YouTube, we love this so much, watching people take things out of boxes. This is like great entertainment, isn't it? It is. It's weird. You get someone with a really good quality camera, and they've set up their camera really well, positioned it so that it points at the desk. They've even got one of those nice box cutters, like a specific little knife that they use to gently open up the box, cutting off any bits of tape or paper or cardboard, and they slide the box open and reveal the contents. Unboxing videos. Aren't they an interesting phenomenon? So anyway, yes, what was I saying? I was saying that there's a video version of this, as you already know, but I'm just reminding you, so you could check that out on YouTube as well. Luke's English Podcast on YouTube. If you want to see Charlie's face and my face, you know, moving, creating words. Right, okay. Also, let me remind you that, as you've just heard Charlie mention, that yes, he interviewed me as well for his podcast and his YouTube channel. So head over to the British English Podcast and you'll find a link in the description to the website. And also Charlie's YouTube channel, Real English with Real Teachers. And there'll be some sort of video version of our chat there. In that conversation, we talked about all sorts of stuff. I don't know how much of it Charlie's going to be using, but we talked about sort of my time playing music in bands and stuff. And then we talked about comedy, doing comedy, stand-up comedy and British humour and things like that. And there were lots of bits and pieces, lots of little anecdotes and things like that. So, yes, you might enjoy it. Okay. All right, then. Well, good. Fine. Everything's fine now. How are you? You all right? Yeah, good. I don't really have much left to say here at this point, other than thank you so much for listening all the way up to this point. And you are a wonderful human being, because this is how we... this is the criteria for judging someone's value as a human. Do they listen all the way up to the end of episodes of Luke's English Podcast? This is the real factor which marks people out. Their consistency and commitment to listening to this podcast. All right, I'm going to stop talking now because I'm rambling. Check out Luke's English Podcast Premium. As you heard me mention at the beginning, I uploaded pronunciation drills, listen and repeat drills with target language from part one of this series I'm doing, which is called What Did Rick Say? And it's all about language that my dad used in a recent episode of the Rick Thompson Report. So if you want to sort of learn the kind of English that my dad uses, then dip into that series and get started, okay? And if you'd like to become a premium subscriber to access all that content and to help support the show, then be my guest, teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. All right, then. I'm not doing a song at the end. I was thinking about it, but I can't. I don't have time. I've got to go and pick up my daughter. This is the thing I always say, isn't it? This is like, I've got to go and pick up my daughter now. But it's true. I do have to go and pick up my daughter, so I can't be sitting here noodling away on a guitar when my daughter's like wandering around in the street. Daddy, where's my daddy? Why didn't you pick me up? Why did you abandon me? It's like, oh, sorry, I was playing a guitar on the end of a podcast. I can't let that happen. All right, so I will now stop rambling, but I will speak to you again soon, okay, in another episode of this podcast in some format. But for now, it's just time for me to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.